Inside Chicago Government.
Consistently attacking the domestic and foreign policy of the United States.
ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. He's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Senator. It's good to have you back. It's been a while.
It's good to be here. Today we're talking about an article written by you and Mick Dumke.
The great Mick Dumke.
That appeared in the Reader on May 21st, 2015, titled The Real Caucuses in the Chicago City Council.
Yes.
In this article, you and Mick identify groups of aldermen whom you expect to vote in certain ways in the city council based on who they've supported, who has supported them, and their respective backgrounds. Ben, according to your article, six aldermen got re-election support from both the Rahm Emanuel-aligned Chicago Forward PAC and public employee unions. These would be Third Ward Alderman Pat Dowell, Will Burns of the 4th, Leslie Hairston of the 5th, Willie Cochran of the 20th, Howard Brookins of the 21st, and Danny Solis of the 25th. Any contradictions there, getting support from, you know, essentially both ends of the spectrum?
Yes, it's called the inherent contradiction of life in Chicago. When we started this project, I didn't think it would be a comprehensive list in each case of these caucuses. We just made up these caucuses. See, the whole point of the story is to give readers a sense of how the council really works. And I will get to your answer, but I've been dying to tell the story behind the story. Mick and I, for at least the last two cycles, maybe three, have done guides to the city council. So every 4 years, we do these little thumbnail sketches of all the 50 new aldermen.
They're great reference pieces.
They're great reference pieces. And then we decided this year, you know what? We don't want to do that this year. We've done enough of that. Let's try doing something different. And so roughly at that time, we were noticing articles in the paper about caucuses that the aldermen have created where they banded together.
The Black caucus, the Latino caucus.
The gay caucus, I think, and there's the progressives.
Paul Douglas,
who are like progressives who suck up to Rahm as opposed to progressives who actually critique him.
The non-progressive progressives.
Yeah. Which is sort of like the Rahm Emanuel wing of the Democratic Party, where they're not quite Democrats. So anyway, we said, let's just try to create our own caucuses that indicate really what's going on in the city council and how the council is divided and what are the ideological divides. So we started thinking about things like where they get their money and how they generally line up to vote. One obvious distinction were the people who received money from Rahm's PAC. What is it called? I always forget.
Chicago Forward.
How could I forget that name? And people who get their money from the SEIU and the teachers union, who usually can be counted on to line up against Mayor Rahm on certain issues. You're absolutely correct. When we did that, we discovered that in some cases, some aldermen got money from both. So you have to look at each individual alderman to see what's going on to answer your question. So for instance, in the case, I think you mentioned, was it Leslie Hairston that got money from both? Yeah. Sometimes it's a strategic move. So Rahm's PAC gave money to Leslie Hairston. Not so much, in my humble opinion, because they wanted to help Leslie Hairston win an election, but they knew she was popular in the ward, and so they thought it would enhance Mayor Rahm's stature with voters in the 5th Ward. That's Leslie Hairston's ward. If the voters, thought that Leslie Hairston was, in fact, a loyal ally of Mayor Rahm, such a loyal ally that he would support her. It's equivalent to one of my favorite acts of political deception by our old friend, former Alderman Richard Mell, who's like written the book on this stuff, on behalf of his daughter, Deb Mell, who's, you know, I'll follow this one out there, folks, running for election in the 33rd Ward, desperately trying to avoid a runoff. Even though she's a loyalist to Mayor Rahm, there were some palm cards that circulated in Hispanic areas of the 33rd Ward in which he was Mel. It said, vote for Deb Mel and Jesus Garcia. Like I said, Richard Mel is the master of this. And so they've all learned a little bit from the master.
Any other ones of note there?
I mean, who've gotten both from both? Well, Danny Solis in the 25th Ward, it's like a bad joke that's being played on progressives. And generally, the jokes played on progressives are bad ones. And that's the one where nobody really knows what to do about Danny Solis. He's pretty wily character himself, cut from the same cloth as Mel. He's able to survive year in and year out, even though he seems to have a propensity for upsetting his constituents. This year was no different. He managed to avoid a runoff, barely avoid a runoff, but he did avoid a runoff in large part because he moved the precincts that voted so heavily against him in the last election into different wards.
Thanks to the ward redistricting.
Thanks to the ward redistricting. The unions, their attitude toward him is, well, we can't beat him. Maybe if we give him money, he will occasionally support us, which is actually sort of similar in theory to what Mayor Rahm was doing with Leslie Hairston. So they throw him some money. Of course, on crucial issues, he will never support them if it means breaking from the mayor. He's made that clear. I'll give you an example. Let's say progressives want a piece of legislation that the mayor opposes to at least advance to committee discussion. They all go around and ask other aldermen to sign on as an endorsement. It's a pretty much meaningless endorsement, but enables them nonetheless to hold a press conference and say something along the lines, we got 25 aldermen to sign on as supporters of this ordinance or this proposal. Of course, if it ever came to vote, half of those aldermen who signed on
would bail,
including Danny Solis, who would be leading the way. But I guess if you donate money to his campaign, he'll sign that meaningless statement. So it just shows you, on one level, how frustrating and difficult it is to be a progressive in Chicago.
It also illuminates the persistent pay-to-play nature of the city council, that if you want your alderman's attention, and this is true in the realm of other elected officials, you've got to make a campaign contribution.
Well, you're coming dangerously close when you said the other realm allusion to what I always tease my good friend, the great Mick Dumke. When I point out the standard defense is not just Mick, is, well, that happens in other cities, so that defends it here. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's acceptable. Well, oh, whew, thank goodness it's happening in New York as well. I don't feel as bad. Yes, there is a pay-to-play aspect to all of this, and it's pervasive throughout the state of Illinois, as we all know, as well as the city of Chicago.
The city council just approved new chairman for a half dozen committees.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And guess what? All the new chairmen all supported Rahm Emanuel's reelection.
The city council is like a punchline, you know what I'm saying?
So it's pretty much an open secret that Rahm Emanuel, like Richard Daley before him, decides who he wants for committee chairs.
I think we could take the words secret out of that statement.
All right.
Okay. Well, no. It's sort of the way it is.
In case listeners, you haven't heard.
Yes. Now, for all listeners who took high school civics, as you recall, there were supposed to be two branches of government, you know, the executive and the legislative. In Chicago, there really is only one. It's the executive. And so he controls the legislative branch. He dictates to the legislative branch who their committee chairs will be. Yes.
And since the committee chairs pretty much decide what legislation the council can vote on, the mayor's control of chairmanships virtually ensures a continued rubber stamp council.
Yes,
is
it does.
Not?
Well, first of all, I would just amend what you said just slightly. It's a degree, slight degree. It's not the committee chair who control. It's the mayor who control. The committee chairs are merely the ones who act out what the mayor tells them to do.
But I mean logistically, procedurally,
logistically, yeah.
the chairman can call something for a vote in committee.
That is correct. He or she could do that if he or she wanted to. That's why Mayor Rahm puts in people who will do what he wants. So yes, it's a rubber stamp council. I've come to the conclusion, Dave, that people in Chicago want a rubber stamp council. Voters of Chicago, at least the people who actually participate in the electoral process, hence the name the voters, have decided that it's in their best interest to put all their power in the hands of an autocrat. And that means electing aldermen who rubber stamp whatever he tells them. I don't know how you could argue differently, since it's been how many elections in a row since we had anything remotely resembling?
Many.
Many. I don't even think you lived in Chicago. You may have lived in Detroit or wherever you were living at the time. Didn't you used to live in Detroit?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. Detroit, New Jersey. What's the difference?
I think you're confusing Newark and Detroit.
No, just the whole entire state.
Have you been to New Jersey?
Have I been to New Jersey? Are you kidding me? Many times. Well, sometimes I've just been driving through New Jersey.
I'm a big defender of New Jersey.
Yeah. It needs a lot of defense. Speaking of autocratic rulers.
I was thinking about geographically, not politically.
I see.
Yeah.
I forget where we were going.
The persisting rubber stamp nature.
Oh, yeah. Though the people of Chicago have made it clear that they want a rubber stamp city council that affirms whatever the mayor tells them to do. I think he's got at least 33 sure votes in that body on any issue. even if the issue they're voting on today contradicts the one they voted for the day before. They will do whatever the mayor tells them.
And an interesting side note, 26th Ward Alderman Roberto Maldonado reportedly was upset that he didn't get the chair of the Human Relations Committee. So he voted no on the city council reorganization of committees, and he said he will now, quote, vote his conscience, unquote, in the city council.
Well, okay, he's already voted his conscience. That is so funny. Like, what, you weren't voting your conscience before? You were just doing what? That's an interesting point. Roberto Maldonado, one of our favorite aldermen, we've discussed him in the past, was one of the few aldermen who voted against decriminalization of marijuana, a position against Mayor Rahm. So he's already been voting his conscience. I don't know how much more conscience he has to vote for or against. And I can't imagine, like, any stated view he's ever had of consciousness that he's violated. So I don't know. Maybe he's now going to come out against TIFs or something like that.
Where did he fall in the Simpson reporting of aldermen who votes aligned with the mayor? Do you recall?
I can't remember the number. I have some issues with the
methodology.
Simpson report. Yeah, the methodology. I mean, in defense of Simpson, it's so difficult to find a meaningful
criteria.
Yes, exactly. And so the one that's meaningful to me is not one that anybody pays attention to, and that's the vote on the Marriott deal, which I think is the most outrageous abuse of public spender by the mayor in his first 4 years in terms of how much money it's taking from the coffers and just literally giving to a private entity. And they didn't even have a legitimate vote on that. You know, it was rubber stamped through. Literally, I mean, it was pushed through on a voice vote. Nobody knew what they were voting for. And then later, I wrote about this. I think we talked about this when it came up, when they had a second bite at the apple to a zoning change. That was the same sort of voice vote. Aldermen who wanted to go on the record as voting against the Marriott deal, the Paul Basketball Arena deal, had to go back and amend the voting record. You know what I'm saying? They go back and change their vote from yes to no.
Because it was the opposite of what they thought it was.
Exactly. They didn't even know what they were voting on. So it's a minor disagreement I have with the Simpson.
For our listeners' benefit, this report was put out by UIC political science professor Dick Simpson and another one of his colleagues that showed in past year or two, I can't remember the period of time, how many times aldermen voted, specific aldermen, voted for proposals that were championed by the mayor. And so we found that many were above 80%.
Yes, above 80%. I think we used their criteria for one of our categories or caucuses, or maybe that got cut.
No, it's in there.
It's in there? Okay.
This year's election saw that 13 non-incumbents were elected to the city council, as many as 7 of whom have joined or might join the Progressive Reform Caucus, which is an actual caucus, and that's the group of aldermen who many view as the most independent of the mayor. Based on your years of watching new idealistic aldermen, what hopes do you have that these newbies can maintain their independence?
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm not kidding.
The way you set that up, was like in your years of watching it, none. No, that's not true. I mean, the great Scott Wagasback has seemed to grow more independent with the years.
Many of my progressive friends want to have his children.
I'm like, okay.
That's the esteem they hold in. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Okay. I'd have to take a look at the list, but I feel as though it's like an evolutionary process here. Very slowly we're evolving from like the muck. I would say that there's probably 3 of them that I'd say have a good chance of being Wagasback-like in their independence.
Can I make some guesses? Carlos Rosa?
Yeah, I have hopes for him. Now, there's a man who was elected from the Logan Square area, which has emerged as probably the most, I guess we call them progressives these days. In the old days, we used to call them liberals, but the most progressive area of town. They elected Will Gazzardi, a state rep, who's actually championing the rights of pensioners. And I think that's a pretty progressive cause.
School testing opt-out.
Yeah, testing opt-out. So he's in his first year down in Springfield, has shown a lot of promise. So I think that what Logan Square, it's not just that the people they send to office the first time around will be progressives, is that there's a chance, a possibility, and this is the key point, that voters will actually be holding them accountable on progressive issues and would support somebody to run against them. I mean, that's the hope, because Rosa replaced Ray Colon, who himself had been elected as a progressive, to oust the old machine candidate. What was that, 2001?
Vilma Colon.
And then he quickly drifted over to the machine style. Well, it took him a while to really anchor himself into a...
to attach himself.
Yeah. To me, the most significant vote that any of the aldermen before Rahm took office had was the parking meter vote. say what you will about Ray Colon, he voted no. He's one of the five who voted no. That's probably the single most outrageous piece of legislation that a mayor has forced the city council to approve. So you've got to give him credit for that.
So can I guess another one of your three? The woman who defeated Pope in the 10th Ward, Sue Garza.
Oh my goodness, yes, Sue Garza, yeah. A social worker for public schools, or counselor. Her father was a great labor leader in the 70s from that area. And so, yeah, I have high hopes for her.
And can you think of the third one?
It's interesting. David Moore in the 17th Ward, I have high hopes for him. Then you get into what we call the First Responders Caucus, which are the police and firefighters who got elected. Mm-hmm. They're going to stand up, I believe, for the rights of pensioners, which may put them at opposite ends with the mayor whenever he plays his cards on the pension issue. You know, he's still holding back on that whole thing. I guess you could say that would show them a sign of independence. Now, whether they would also lend their support to, let's say, a vote against another Marriott hotel handout, a corporate subsidy, remains to be seen.
Because they might be one-trick ponies.
That is correct. That was the point we were making when we put them in the first responders. In other words, this may be the sign that we're having a new emergence in the council of folks who have like a quote-unquote special interest, all right, and would vote that way even if it meant going against the mayor, which in our past, at least in daily years, I can't recall any alderman who would deviate from it. Very early on in the mayor year, there was I don't know if you were in town or in New Jersey, can't remember, there was a mini revolt over a proposed property tax hike. And that revolt was led by a guy named Lasky, who went on to become our
city clerk. And then later was indicted.
He was indicted.
And prosecuted.
And became a talk show DJ.
Others have followed that path to fame.
Governor Blagojevich is waiting for his chance we speak.
I'll subscribe to that podcast.
I think this new band of aldermen could prevail as a new, it's like a mini force on the issue of pensions in the city council.
Finally, speaking about financial issues, we recently saw reports of a city council committee having finally chosen someone to head the council's independent budget office. And this was an office created by the city council about a year back to advise the council on things having to do with budgets, which they don't currently have. The choice of the chair was to be made by a committee of aldermen selected to do just this thing, and they couldn't come to an agreement. They were stalemated over another candidate, former alderman Helen Schiller. But the appointee who's been announced, his name is Ben Winnick, and he's formerly an official in Governor Pat Quinn's budget office, and who reportedly was suggested to the committee by Mayor Emanuel. Any comments?
Yes. I mean, that just sort of sums it all up, doesn't it? I don't know the gentleman, Winnick. So for all I know, he's going to prove to be an outstanding independent judge of the mayor's budget ideas. I wish him well. Hope he does emerge that way. But it's not off to a promising start when the independent watchdog is endorsed for the job by the person he's supposed to be watching. It's sort of like the legislative branch committees being filled by the executive branch. So the whole point of this is to have an independent watchdog. And it's so long since they voted on, I think a year has passed at least.
Since they created the independent budget office.
I don't know how many bond deals have been approved by the council that have not been scrutinized by the independent office. I don't even know if he'll have the capability to scrutinize bond deals. We're continually borrowing more money to pay off the debt that we can never seem to get out of and try to extricate ourselves from these horrendous swaps contracts that Mayor Daley signed on to. So we've had all these bond deals that have passed without any scrutiny. The aforementioned Marriott handout, DePaul basketball handout, went unscrutinized. Not that they would have listened to him anyway, but there was no oversight of that. It's been at least two budgets, city council budgets.
There's plenty of work that this analyst could have done.
Could have done, supposedly would have done. Now we'll see. So
that's all we have time for. Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Senator.
Listeners, do you have suggestions for future interviews? You can get those to us via Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government or email us via contact@shygov.com. I'm Dave Gloetz. Thanks for listening.